talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning, it is April 4th. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And this is the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I guess we're all recovering from Comic-Con. Michelle, did you go to Comic-Con?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you're smart. Jim, you were there all day yesterday.
I was there for about an hour and a half yesterday. My feet are recuperating from it, I tell you. Those hard concrete floors don't do me any
How
favors.
Was it?
It's okay. You know, I'm there to buy books and comics and all that, and there's maybe out of the 50 vendors, there's maybe like five or six that are selling actual comic books.
50 vendors? I think there's more like,
probably like
300 vendors. Yeah,
but very, very few selling books, and I was like, I want some books.
A lot of those pop figures.
Oh, the pop figures, the t-shirts, the cosplay accessories.
Yeah. And then you got like gutter guards, you know, and
yeah, the bath fit people were there. I'm like, what?
Do they make money at those things?
I don't know. Well, I hope the guys are getting paid to be there and stand at their podiums and hand out flyers and all
that. Yes. I spent a total of $8.50, and that was for a 24-ounce beer.
That's more than I spent.
I didn't even pay to park this year.
Neither did I.
I drove a friend down there, and he offered to pay to park.
Oh.
Although I did have to give money to my 16-year-old, and she spent a lot. So.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't get off totally scot-free.
Did you get anything fun there? Well, I guess she didn't get any autographs.
She's into anime.
Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff
anime
there.
Anime shows. So she bought a t-shirt and a hat and some kind of pillowcase with all these anime figures on it.
Were the studios there? Any of films?
No, well, there was someone there representing Warner's because they had a display for Suicide Squad. There was maybe a local. Was it local people that were helping to promote Jungle Book? Because they had a setup there.
That was Allied, yeah. Megan from Allied was doing Jungle Book, and Joe from Allied was doing Suicide Squad.
Okay.
At least on Saturday. You were there on Sunday.
Now, I noticed in your photos, Tom, you got to kind of see or spot from a few yards away Shatner.
Yeah.
The Shatman.
Yeah.
He was there?
Oh, yeah, he was there. There was a big sign that said no photos allowed in this area, but I took a photo anyway.
And I saw when I was walking around, I saw mostly TV stars. I saw James Marsters, who was Spike, and I saw the Daredevil himself, Charlie Cox, who was producing Hell's Kitchen this weekend with him in St. Louis, and Mike Coulter, Luke Cage, Hero for Hire.
Okay. It was all TV stars. I don't think there was a single movie person there.
That's true.
Kristen Ritter apparently canceled. I went to the press party Thursday night briefly, and Marsders and Lou Ferrigno were there.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to talk to Lou for a little bit.
You beat him at arm wrestling for a few times.
Oh, you bet.
There,
Anybody else from Daredevil there?
Well, Eldon Henson was supposedly there, but he wasn't at his table when
I saw him. Yeah,
okay.
I can't wait for that to start up again.
What, Daredevil? Daredevil. It already has.
Yeah. Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, second season's been out for a couple of weeks.
Where have I been?
I'm four episodes in.
Okay.
All right, enough TV talk. Let's talk about movies. The top 12 over the box office over the weekend looks pretty much like it did last weekend, Michelle.
It does, doesn't it?
Except I Saw the Light took over the number one spot, didn't it? No.
How'd you guess? Mm. Here are the top 12 weekend box office estimates from ComScore. Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice was number one again with $52.4 million. It was down a staggering, whopping 68% from last weekend's opening of $166 million.
Considering nothing was out against it this weekend.
Yeah.
Telling you, this was one of those, it was all front loaded.
I've got some comments about that later.
However, ComScore's senior media analyst Paul Tergarabedian commented, "Another bat-tastic weekend at the global box office as Warner Brothers movie adds $137.5 million to its already impressive total, and finishes its second weekend with $682.8 million in the superhero box office bank." So there's that. You know, Warner Brothers, they need this. They really, really need this to be a hit because you've got Justice League. You've got all these other, an Aquaman movie, a Wonder Woman movie.
Well,
so.
There was a story about the Suicide Squad that they're pumping millions into it in reshoots in order to lighten it up.
Mm-hmm.
So they are listening to some of the criticism of Batman v Superman.
We're going to get to see footage on the MTV Movie Awards next weekend. And all the stars are going to be there promoting it.
Some people think it's to get the Deadpool crowd into it, too. Mm-hmm. So.
At number two is Zootopia with $20 million. Disney's animated family hit continues to roar across the world with its eye towards its next milestone of $800 million.
Now, has it surpassed Frozen, I wonder? I heard it was about to. Yeah, it is.
And number three is My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 with a respectable 11.1 million in its second weekend. God's Not Dead 2, the sequel, was number four.
Didn't show that to us.
Yeah, no. that's the only real big new release, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Or wide release, mm-hmm. I suppose.
The film from Pure Flix took in 8.1 million. And number five is Miracles from Heaven from Sony Pictures that took in $7.5 million. The Divergent series Allegiant was number six. That brought in another $5.7 million to the next chapter in that franchise. 10 Cloverfield Lane was number seven. The film added $4.8 million to its already $63.5 million domestic total.
That's pretty respectable, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Paramount Pictures is really happy with that one.
Yeah.
And so were crowds because they're still seeing it. So at number eight was Meet the Blacks from Freestyle Releasing.
Blacks. I want to see Meet the Blacks. It's a spoof of The Purge, apparently, uh-huh. with an all-black cast.
Really? I thought it was a spoof of Meet the Parents, but it's The Purge,
no,
huh?
It's The uh-huh. Purge, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I might need to see that,
and
too.
The next Purge movie is coming out this summer.
Well, why do we need that? We've got Meet the Blacks.
Meet the Blacks brought in $4.1 million. Helen Mirren's movie Eye in the Sky was number nine. The Bleecker Street film brought in $4.1 million. At number 10, Deadpool from 20th Century Fox. The film saw $3.5 million at the box office. Its new global total stands at $754 million. The DVD Blu-ray release will happen on May 10th. So wow. If you don't see it in the theaters, pick it up in May.
Oh, yes.
Number 11 was Hello, My Name is Doris from Roadside Attractions. That brought in another $2.4 million. And rounding out the 12 is London Has Fallen with $1.9
million.
Next weekend, audiences can head out to see Everybody Wants Some, the follow-up to Dazed and Confused, Demolition starring Jake Gyllenhaal, and Hardcore Henry and the Boss.
Yeah.
The Boss opens Friday?
Yes, it does.
Are they showing that to us?
Yeah, they are. They are tomorrow night. Yeah,
tomorrow night.
Yeah. It's the same night as your 16. Yeah.
Oh, you're going to miss The Mighty Peking Man.
I might see a little of it at the end. So
it's only about 85 minutes long, so but, I probably won't.
Yeah, I've got an interesting story about Batman v Superman. You heard what Latino Review did Friday?
Yes.
Oh, those cruel, cruel men. Did you hear about this, Tom?
What'd they do?
Well, they reported an exclusive that Zack Snyder had been relieved of his directing duties on Justice League, and they were bringing in George Miller. And I was like, hallelujah! And I actually started to do a little dance at my laptop when I read mm-hmm. that. And then he even put in what was supposedly a tweet from Zack Snyder thanking Warners for the opportunities and wishing George Miller good luck. And I was like, finally, they've come to their senses at Warner Brothers. But no, it was April Fool's.
Yes.
You cruel, cruel Latina Review.
What's really funny is any press releases I got that day, April 1st, they were all, this is not an April Fool's joke.
But a couple of amazing reviews of it out there. Did you? I saw one from a major newspaper saying that the reason that the most Marvel fans had a problem with Batman and v Superman was they weren't intelligent enough to appreciate
it. Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, and
it was too intelligent for the Marvel crowd.
Yes, and the other one was so. I don't think it was an April Fool's. It was actually a video review from a national newspaper / magazine. A reviewer saying he appreciated Batman v Superman, but it disturbed him so much because it reminded him of his parents' angry divorce. And he said every fist against from Superman to Batman just reminded him of his parents arguing. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's just the movie's all about you. For gosh
was
sakes.
Was his mother's name Martha?
No, right. no, it was ridiculous.
Let's get started on some reviews. We got a few movies to review and some stuff to talk about. Let's start with Demolition.
Dear Champion Vending Company, I put 5 quarters in your machine and proceeded to push B2, which should have given me peanut M&Ms. Regrettably, it did not. I found this upsetting as I was very hungry, and also my wife had died 10 minutes earlier. I'm not saying that was your fault. I just want to be thorough.
Julia Demolition was stars Jake Gyllenhaal as Davis Mitchell, who's lives in New York, and the movie opens with him arguing with his wife, and suddenly there's this car crash, and she is killed. That's not a spoiler. That happens like in 90 seconds.
It's in the trailers, in the that's trailer, for sure, yeah.
Of the film. So the movie becomes the story of this man dealing with grief, or really more appropriately not dealing with grief. He sort of denies the fact that his wife is dead. Meanwhile, his father-in-law, played by Chris Cooper, is dealing with his grief in a much more conventional way, where Davis is, he takes to taking things apart. I guess it's sort of a metaphor about how things have to be taken apart to be put back together. It's pretty heavy-handed stuff.
Oh, brother.
When he's in the emergency room after his wife has died, he goes up to the candy machine in the emergency room, tries to buy some peanut M&Ms, and they don't fall out of the machine properly. So a lot of the movie is told in this narration of him writing letters to the vending machine company. Well, it turns out that the woman who works at the vending machine company, sort of in customer relations, is played by Naomi Watts, and she's receiving his letters, and she calls him up at 2 a.m. and tells her that tells him that his letters made her cry. So he develops a relationship with this woman, and she's got a 15-year-old son who's got his own issues, so he befriends the son, and he has these adventures, and all the time he's trying to deal with his grief. It's not a bad movie at all. It's actually a pretty good movie. It's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, who directed Matthew McConaughey to an Oscar in the Dallas Buyers Club. He directed something between these two movies.
Yeah, Wild.
Oh, that's right, Wild, which got Reese Witherspoon an Oscar nomination. So he's has a history of directing good performances from actors. This one's a little contrived.
Oh, little.
What's really funny is the screenplay was featured, was like one of the big features of 2007's Blacklist as one of the most liked unmade scripts of the year.
I don't know what they saw in it.
Well, I liked it more than you did. It's real heavy-handed with its symbolism, but it sort of makes fun of that. I think at the beginning, after his wife dies, he's driving around and goes, "Everything I see is a metaphor." So then that just sort of sets it up as sort of a spoof of these sort of pretentious movies. But it does have a lot of problems, but I kind of liked it. Jake Gyllenhaal is really, really good in it. He's become one of our top actors, and especially Chris Cooper, who plays his father-in-law / boss, who's grieving over the
This is their third film together.
Yeah. Jawhead and October Sky. October Sky is such a little gem of a movie.
That is a great movie. But, a lot of it really doesn't make any sense. He teams up with this kid, and they have their own adventures, and this kid is gay and is sort of accepting that. And they go out in the woods, and the kid has a .38 automatic pistol, and he shoots Jake Gyllenhaal from about 6 feet away right into the chest. But, of course, Jake's wearing a bulletproof vest, which isn't... You're still going to go to the hospital. That seems ridiculous.
Well, I just wouldn't give that kid a firearm, and it wouldn't be anywhere near it, for gosh sake.
And then there's another scene that doesn't make any sense where he pulls over because he sees this construction crew working on a houses, and he slips them like $200, and they hand him a sledgehammer, and he starts smashing up this house. Which I guess is sort of this catharsis that he's seeking. But there's no way any construction crew, no matter how they're bonded, is going to let some guy come in off the street just for liability reasons alone, because if the guy got hurt, they'd all lose their jobs. And of course, he does get hurt, actually.
Yeah. It's just one of the many ridiculous things in the film.
Yeah, and why would this customer service rep for the vending machine call him at 2 a.m.?
Oh.
There's a lot.
Well, she smokes a lot of pot.
Yeah, that's right.
But I have a medical prescription.
So she says.
Yes.
Another thing I found distracting is that his wife is in the first scene, and she gets killed. But she keeps coming back either in flashbacks or visions. And I thought this actress, her name is Heather Lind, I thought it was Katy Perry. I'm not kidding. And I'm a fan of Katy Perry. I look at pictures of her all the time.
I'll bet you do.
All the time. And I really thought, they've given Katy Perry this nice dramatic role.
You'd hear about it, I think. You hear a lot more about it.
And so I sat through the credits, and it wasn't her. And it kind of freaked me out, because I thought for sure it was her. And even to this day, I'm looking at pictures of this actress, and to me, at least, she looks just like Miss Perry. That's sort of an aside. It has nothing to do with the movie. But I'll be reviewing Demolition this Thursday evening. I'm actually going to give it a pretty good review. It didn't bore me. I thought it was sort of interesting. Jim obviously liked it less than I did.
Did bore me.
Yeah, did it? I don't know.
You know, it just seems so, some of it so ludicrous. And there's a scene in which he gets a mixtape from the kid, and there's a painful scene of him dancing amongst the commuters, and it's like, oh, he's a free spirit amongst the squares,
right?
And it's like, we've seen that before.
Oh, there's the scene where he's walking forwards through downtown New York, and everybody else is walking backwards. How many times have we seen that scene?
Brother.
Oh, yeah. And well, Naomi Watts's role is nothing in it.
I was just going to ask you, how
it's a terribly written role. She does as best she can with it, but there's nothing to that character besides sort of, you know, being a companion to him. And
it's a platonic relationship. Yeah. Too. They don't enter into a romance, which you think they are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that, like, her pot dealer is this crusty old guy that's taking care of a decaying carousel ride. Yeah. Oh, come on.
That's where I get my weed, over at the broken down carnival. Yeah, I agree. But at the same time, Jake Gyllenhaal is really good.
Well, he's not getting a nomination.
I mean, when is he not?
No. And Chris Cooper is especially good. his character is sort of heartbreaking because he has the exact opposite reaction that Jake has, and he can't understand why his son-in-law is acting the way he is. And Jake just tears everything apart in the office. He takes the men's bathroom apart with his screwdriver.
And another scene I hated is when, they show this real nice high-tech home that he shares with his wife, and of course he destroys the home. And he and the kid do.
He buys a bulldozer on eBay.
Yes, and you're like,
doesn't he take apart the refrigerator?
Well, he does it at first. That's early on, and then he just destroys the whole home.
Well, that's what he and his wife are arguing about when she's killed, is that the refrigerator is leaking.
And he's not doing anything about it.
So that sort of sets him off, I think. It's not a great movie. It's probably not going to do particularly well, but it definitely has some things going for it. So look for my review of Demolition Thursday night at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Also, a movie that opened this past Friday here in town was called My Golden Days. Do we know who directed that?
Arnaud Desplechin. Desplechin.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. And then you reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. What'd you give it, 2 stars?
I think it was 2 stars, something like that.
2 out of 5, so he didn't care for it too much.
No, it just kind of went on and on. It just went off on these different strange tangents and didn't do much for me. I guess if you're it's almost like a French version of Endless Love or something like that, you know, with a fellow looking back at the love of his life.
But it's funny, I had no idea what it was about when I went and saw it. I had no idea at all. And it starts out where he's grabbed and he's thrown into this interrogation room and given the third degree by this mysterious guy. I thought it was going to be some kind of political thriller or something.
Well, yeah, so did I. I mean, it goes, you know, and then he all of a sudden he flashes back to when he's about 8 years old, and you think it's going to be about that.
Yeah.
About this weird family that he had growing up.
But it turns out, like, 20 years earlier, he had given his passport to a Jew in Russia to escape to Israel. And that guy has died, and they're wondering who this guy with his name and identity is. But that really has really nothing to do with the movie. It's really about his big love with, what was her name?
Oh, Esther.
Esther, yeah.
But it's funny, the official plot synopsis says, you know, it talks about his journey to Russia where he lost his virginity. I'm like, when did that happen? I don't recall that at all. You know, unless they just mean that he, you know, did something illegal and that was sort of, you know, taking his innocence or something. Yeah. It was very odd.
Yeah, he's played by Matthew Amalric.
Yes.
He's a familiar actor. Did you mention in your review that this is actually a sequel to another film?
It's a prequel.
It's a prequel and sequel because it's a movie called My Sex Life by the same director, and he's trying to do this. I guess he thinks he's the new Francois Truffaut.
It's like a trilogy, huh?
Yeah. But, you know, what's funny about this movie, it's really a love story. It's about his relationship with this young girl, Esther, played by Leroy Lecolinot. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of a little sex bot. She even looks a little bit like Brigitte Bardot. But he's young. But it's about him as a college student.
This is the
great love of his life, and that's what most of the movie is about. And it's got all this stuff in it that would have driven me nuts if this been an American independent film. You got the Iris going on with the camera. You've got split screen. You've got him talking to the camera. If this had been some annoying American independent film, that's all the kind of precious stuff that just grates on my nerves. And, but for some reason, yeah. since it was a French film, I cut it a little slack. I think I liked it a little bit more than you did. It yeah. did get a little dull.
And lots of smoking, by gosh. Yeah, cartons and cartons of the stuff.
Yeah, I think the cigarettes were sort of an accessory to these kids.
Make you nauseous.
France in the 80s. It's getting mostly good reviews, though. You're one of the few bad reviews that I've seen on it, but that's okay.
Well, unfavorable. It's not a bad review because I wrote it, so it's well written, so you can't say that.
Yeah, but I think people who like
it just wasn't keen.
People
on
who
it.
Like romance and love stories and French films are probably going to like this film.
Well, it's like spending a couple hours with a couple, guy and his gal who are into a lot of drama, have a lot of drama in their relationship, and that gets tiring after a while. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. They bring up these little subplots. One of his brothers, when he's a teenager, is planning a bank heist, and they do away with that subplot and kind of throw it away in about 5 minutes. And it's going off in all these different directions. He's got an aunt that was kind to him, and she's got a gay lover and all that. And it's very, very strange.
And there's his teacher who has a relationship with, and his father's depressed. And
I mentioned in my review. The teacher is black, and when she passes away unexpectedly, there's a scene of him. He's so distraught, he actually starts painting his face black, with like burnt cork or something. I'm like, what the heck? Is this the jazz singer? What's going on?
And he faints. So my golden days, I'm kind of up the middle on it. Jim liked it a little less than me. But if you like a French romance, you could probably do worse than my golden days.
Oh, yes. You could do a lot worse.
All righty. Sure. Let's move on to Everybody Wants Some. This is something completely different from director, writer Richard Linklater.
I'd like to introduce you to the new guys. Two rules. No booze in this house. Number two, no girls upstairs in those bedrooms.
I'm seriously worried about these new guys.
This is about college students around 1980. What did I like about Linklater? He and I were born right about the same time. So Dazed and Confused was class of 78 high school. I was class of 79. So I can really relate to the time period he set some of his films in. And especially this one. I would have been in college in 1980 as well as a freshman. What is it about? It's about college baseball players at an unnamed college in Texas.
Yes.
And it's kind of a meandering, shaggy dog story. There's not a whole lot of plot to it. There's no real conflict. There's no villains. It's just about this group of guys, and it's really, really laid back, but it's really, really good.
Yeah, well, the closest we have to a villain is the kind of goofball who's got enamored with himself, and he's got a weird bowl haircut and mustache, and he's very entertaining in it. But, there's no real bad guys. It's just kind of a slice of life deal. It's maybe about 5 or 6 days leading up to the first day of school.
It's the weekend, actually. I think
just the weekend,
and they count down the hours, hours till the first class, hours till the second, till the first class.
That's right.
And then when at the very end, I don't want to spoil it, but the fade-out shot is priceless. Because what happens when it counts down to zero? I don't want to give anything away. It's really a good movie.
Michael Hafner's reviewing it for us, and he really, really liked it.
Yeah, it's really one of the best movies of the year. And I think this is a movie that it's not going to go away. I think 10 years from now, these actors in this movie are going to be big, and they're going to say, this was, Blake Jenner, he's sort of the main character. And I'd never heard of this guy, Blake Jenner. But 10 years from now, I guarantee you're going to be talking about Blake Jenner and Tyler Hoechlin.
Well, supposedly Blake is on the short list to play young Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's right.
That could happen.
I can see that.
Yeah. It's got a lot of second-generation stars in it. It's got Kurt and Goldie's son.
Wiley Russell,
And it's got Leia Thompson's daughter.
Zoe Deutsch is her name, and she looks just like Leah Thompson in Back to the Future.
Yeah, it's very entertaining. So it's going to be thought of just like Dazed and Confused. And look how many great actors came out of Dazed and Confused.
Zoe Deutsch, her character is really the only female character, with any depth, at least, in the film. And she plays, a fine arts major, and she gets involved with Blake Jenner's character.
Boy, they get the time period exactly right in this. Yeah. It's so amazing.
And it's really funny and really well written. I think the trailer's a little misleading because they show the one scene where they're duct taped to the boards and they're hitting baseballs at them, which makes it look like a broader comedy than it is. I think it may have been a kind of a hard movie to cut a trailer around. Actually, when I leave here from the On STL studios, I'm heading downtown. I'm interviewing three of the stars, Blake Jenner, Tyler Hoechlin, and Ryan Guzman.
You might remember as the boy next door.
Yeah, in fact, I seriously have my book of the Odyssey out in my car, and I'm going to have him. I'm going to have him sign it and write first edition on it and sign it for me. I'm serious. What a great little collectible that'll be.
Oh yes.
But he's much better in this than he was in The Boy Next Door. Although Boy Next Door was kind of a guilty pleasure.
Well, he's kind of obsessed with his dairy hair in this movie. Yeah. Which is, does it look right? Does it look good?
Yeah. So look for that interview with those guys later this week. And look for Mike Hafner's review of Everybody Wants Some, with two exclamation points, by the way.
Mm-hmm. So if you were reviewing it, Tom, what would you give it?
How many? It 4.5 out of 5 stars.
I think I'd give it a solid 4, maybe leaning forward towards 4.5.
There you go. It's one of the best films of the year. I guess that's it for reviewing new movies. There's not a whole lot going on this week. But there is a lot going on this week in local stuff. Tomorrow at 10:30 a.m., I will be speaking at the Missouri History Museum over on Lindell. They just opened an exhibit over the weekend called The Little Black Dress, and it's all about black dresses. I don't know what that has to do with Missouri. I think it's a traveling exhibit, but it's very popular. Apparently, the Saturday opening had a huge crowd. I stopped by yesterday and looked at it because I'm going to be delivering a lecture tomorrow there called The Top 10 Black Dresses in the Movie.
Can I make a guess at number one?
Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
That is very near the top, but it is not number one.
Oh,
really?
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say.
All the more reason to read the list.
All the more reason to go to the History Museum tomorrow at 10:30 and see what is number one. You would think that would be number one, but it's not. There's a black dress that I think is more familiar and more iconic than Audrey Hepburn's classic dress, designed by Givenchy. All these dress designers only have one.
No, Givenchy, please.
Is that right? Givenchy? Oh,
yeah.
I'm glad you told me that.
Givenchy?
Okay. Yes. I'm glad you told me that. I'm the last person in the world that should be delivering a lecture on fashion in the first place. You know, my favorite movie star is Charles Bronson. Okay, I come from horror movies. But this is something that Johnny Rabbit asked me to do, and I'm not going to say no to Johnny Rabbit. He's always been super nice to me. So we'll see how it goes. Actually, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's tomorrow at 10:30. And go check out the exhibit. The interesting thing about the exhibit, they don't mention movies anywhere in the exhibit. And I'm sure the curator did that on purpose. There's no references to how film influenced fashion. And really, Clara Bow in It was really the black dress that made black dresses acceptable. So I'm sure that was a conscious decision not to mention movies in the exhibit, because then you'd open a whole can of worms and have to go into all kinds of black dresses and movies.
Wow, I'm really curious what the number one is then, if it's not Holly Golightly.
It's not.
Wow. I can't think of any other. I can't think.
Well, it's actually kind of obvious. All right, let's move on. You know, one thing we didn't mention is a movie that opens Friday called Hardcore Henry. which they're not showing to us. Even though it's getting awesome reviews, why aren't they showing us Hardcore Henry?
Dude, we're so hardcore, we're not going to let you see it.
Yeah, it's more focus groups with the college group. So, and the Michael Shannon movie is also opening finally, Midnight Special.
Yeah, but they're getting reviews come out of it, and it's, you know, the reviews are really good on it. So,
all right. Other local stuff. Let's see. High Point does their classic movie every Saturday, the second Saturday of every month, and they always announce it like on Wednesday. So I don't know what's going on at the High Point. Go to their website.
Or go to
MovieGeeks.com.
What is it this Saturday?
They're
not going to say till Wednesday.
No,
that's odd.
That's stupid. They should do it the month before so they can have a whole month promoted. But they get big crowds anyway. So, Andy over at Destroy the Brain, his late night grindhouse, he does announce his movie way in advance.
Yes.
This weekend, we've talked about Rolling Thunder with William Devane, which is superb. I can't wait to see Rolling
Thunder.
Tom's
not going, are you, Tom?
Oh, I'm going Friday night. Are you going? You guys going?
I think I'm going to make it. That's a great film.
It is a great film.
It'd be great. Interesting to see with an audience, too.
Oh, yeah. Friday the 13th of May, he is showing Friday the 13th, Final Chapter, appropriately enough. That's the fourth Friday the 13th movie, and it's actually considered by fans of that series to be the best. That's the one that's got Corey Feldman and Crispin Glover. I think they play a couple of Jason's victims, and Joseph Zito directed it. He did Missing in Action and the Prowler and a couple of other pretty good films.
I think Corey's character is like a horror film fan.
Yeah, so that's not till May 13th, so we'll talk about that a little bit more. What else can we talk about? Oh, the St. Louis Symphony is doing one of their things where they show a movie and they they strip out the musical track and they play along. And I saw The Godfather last year.
And I saw Gladiator.
Did you? It's really cool when they do it.
It's amazing
how much, I mean, if you just close your eyes, you think you're watching the movie.
Mm-hmm.
This Saturday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they're doing E.T., which is a movie that would be nothing without its score, frankly.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing that's aged the best about that film is the score. I don't think the creature design is aged very well. Yeah, John Williams' score. Imagine if they'd have made that movie with like an 80s electronic score or something instead of bucking up for John Williams. That movie would not
but
have
you
aged
know what?
Very well.
That's one of my favorite things, to jump into another, Eddie the Eagle. It was, if you listen to the score from Eddie the Eagle by Matthew Margison, it is very kind of that techno.
A lot of that
kind of score would not have worked with E.T.
Well, that was the thing with It Follows last year. I mean, you know, it was John Carpenter influenced music score, that's for sure, from the 70s.
Also locally, tomorrow night is my 16mm double feature night over at the Way Out Club, 2525 Jefferson, 8 o'clock. I will be showing The Mighty Peking Man, which is a riotous Chinese King Kong knockoff from 1977.
What kind of knockoff?
Kong?
No.
A riotous?
Thank you.
It's a laugh riot.
It is a laugh riot. And that stars the beautiful Swedish blonde actress Evelyn Kraft and a bunch of Chinese dudes, and it's really fun. And then I'll be showing after that a widescreen print of Dirty Harry starring Clint Eastwood from 1971.
Oh, with Peking Man, I want to echo, I guess, Ain't It Cool, and say, man in suit.
Yeah, there you go.
Good, Jim.
Man in ratty, cheap suit.
Almost as ratty as
expressionless.
Couldn't be as ratty as Ape.
No. And I don't think the Ape gives the finger to the camera in The Mighty Peking Man like he does in Ape. But X-Men Man's a lot of fun. It's really funny. It moves like lightning. It's only about 75 minutes long. So come out to the Way Out Club tomorrow night, Tuesday the 5th at 8 o'clock. And now I can announce next month's 16mm double feature night. This is the first time anybody's going to hear what the titles are. First off, at 8 o'clock is the granddaddy of all disaster movies from 1972. It's Gene Hackman, Shelley Winters, Ernest Borgnine. Who else is in this movie, Jim?
Roddy McDowall,
Leslie Nielsen.
Yes,
Ernest Borgnine.
Stella Stevens, Eric Shea, Pamela Sue Martin.
Oh, yes.
I watch it every time they have it on TCM.
There's got to be a morning after.
There's got to be, and there'll be a morning after at the
Way
Out Club.
Didn't that win
best song? I think
it did. Yes, it did. Yeah. And that'll be at 8 o'clock.
So what's the name of the movie?
The Poseidon Adventure, of course.
What film fan wouldn't know?
All right. So that's going to be a lot of
Allen
fun. And that's from the collection of my buddy Roger Burke, a 16mm print. He says the color in it is spectacular.
Really?
And speaking of spectacle, our second bill will be from my collection. It is Ray Harryhausen's 1963 masterpiece, Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh,
and this is a 16mm print that
that's
I own.
That's the one with the fighting skeletons.
And it's
Hydra.
It's a Technicolor print as well.
Oh, I might have to go to these.
You're going to have to. It's going to be awesome. I haven't shown this print in public since Kit Builder's Monstrous Weekend in October of 2008. Unfortunately, a couple of years ago, I had some water leakage in my basement, and some water got splashed on the third reel. And so there's about a 10 or 12 minute part that's ruined. In fact, I'm going to have to cut it out. And ironically, it's the scene where Triton, who's the sort of Poseidon-like god, comes up out of the water. So I guess it's better than having one of the stop motion scenes, but I always love that scene. That Triton looks so freaking huge, and his big old fish tail flops up in the foreground. That is such a great scene. Unfortunately, my print will be minus that scene.
What date is this again?
This will be the first Tuesday of May. I think I want to say it's like the first or second or something like that. But I'll be talking about it again.
Yeah, I think it's the second. Yeah.
Okay, future podcast. It'll be 4 weeks from tomorrow.
Going back to the Poseidon Adventure, who does Leslie Nielsen play in the credits? Do you remember his name?
Well, he's the captain.
Yes.
What's his?
No, that's it.
The captain.
That still tickles me every time the credits roll. And Leslie Nielsen is the captain.
There you go. I think it's Captain Frank Drebin. All right. There's all kinds of local stuff going on. Oh, A Film Series. That is something I host over at Schlafly Bottleworks the first Thursday of every month. This Thursday, they're showing a documentary about nuclear waste bubbling around in St. Louis County. It's called The First Secret City. And it's co-directed by C.D. Seltzer and Allison Carrick. And both Ms. Carrick and Mr. Seltzer will be at Schlafly Bottleworks this Thursday night. So I usually talk about the movie, but I think what I'll probably end up doing is just introducing these these two filmmakers, let them talk, and then perhaps moderate a Q&A about the documentary when it's over. It's at 7 o'clock at Schlafly Bottle Works, and that is $6, but all that money goes to a charity called Helping Kids Together. The 12th Annual Italian Film Festival of St. Louis starts this Sunday. This thing isn't promoted very well.
How many years have they... Is this
like
an
12th,
annual?
Yeah.
12th?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah, they do this thing. Sometimes they show 35mm prints. They do some of it over at Brown Hall on the campus of Washington University, and they moved it around a little bit. They're showing some over at Flow Valley Community College.
Is this an independent thing, or are they involved with Cinema St. Louis?
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with Cinema St. Louis. And I think it goes from city to city as well. I don't know a whole lot about it. I haven't heard of any of these films. So go to www.italianfilmfests.org. And also I'll put some up at We Are Movie Geeks this week as well. So lots going on locally. We lost an Oscar winner last week. Patty Duke died at age 69. But her identical cousin, Kathy Duke, I think is still doing fine.
Over in Scotland.
Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as identical cousins. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. The scientists would be studying them. That's what the sitcom would be about.
Yeah,
no
doubt.
Just bringing, you know, like, how did this happen?
Yeah. That's not genetically possible. Ironically, William Shallert, who played her father on that TV show, is alive and well. How old is he? He's got to be in his 90s, mid-90s maybe.
Yeah.
But he's apparently doing well enough that Patty Duke and William Shallert were supposed to team up and do an autograph show this weekend. She won't be there. I assume he still will. She was an Oscar winner. She won the Oscar in 63?
Yeah, 63. I believe that was year as Lawrence of Arabia winning Best Picture.
And she would have been up against Mary Badham for To Kill a Mockingbird, and two young actresses, and Patty Duke, who was, 15 or 16 at the time, emerged victorious.
Now, she had originally had that role on Broadway, so she had a little practice before the movie started up. So.
Yeah.
But, of course, I was in a high school production of that.
Oh, yeah.
I got to play her father.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you played Helen Keller.
Oh, no. I was Captain Keller. My daughter can't hear.
She was 16 years old when she won the Oscar, and at the time, it made her the youngest person ever to win an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress.
Huh, interesting.
So,
well, coincidentally, we lost George Kennedy last month, who won Best Supporting Actor in 1967 for Cool Hand Luke, and I got on YouTube, and I watched the ceremony of him winning the Oscar, and guess who presented him the Oscar? It was Patty Duke.
Oh, my goodness.
And Bob Hope was the host, and he's interviewing Patty, who was 21, I guess, at the time.
Yeah, was that the time? Or it wasn't the same year as Valley of the
Dolls. Oh, it certainly was.
And
Bob Hope says, you got a new movie coming out called Valley of the Dolls. How is this movie? And Patty Duke says, I don't know. My parents won't let me see it. Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. She's 21.
Also,
she was already in Popping Pills, I believe.
She was also, I knew she was president of one of the guilds.
Oh,
she was president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yes.
She won multiple Golden Globe Awards, multiple Emmy Awards. Mm-hmm. So,
did a lot of TV. Only a handful of feature films that I can recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was in The 4D Man with Robert Lansing and Lee Merriweather.
One of my favorites as a kid growing up, I watched the sitcom quite a bit, and she did a movie called Billy around the same time she did the sitcom, where she was playing like this young athlete. And it's a nice little popcorn-type movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did Valley of the Dolls and got more adult stuff.
Oh, yeah, and she played the character that she played in Valley of the Dolls was based on Judy Garland.
Patty Duke as Neely, who was such a nice kid. And then someone put her name in lights and turned her into a lush. She took the red pills.
Sure, I say, Dolph, I've got to get some sleep.
I've got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
You know it's bad to take liquor with those pills.
They work faster.
Have you heard from Jennifer?
She wanted to know where she could get an abortion.
It's about a child actor who gets addicted to pills, just like Judy did. And Judy Garland was actually cast also in Valley of the Dolls, playing the older actress. And apparently Judy Garland was showing up drunk and stoned out of her mind. So she got fired from Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, replaced her with Susan Hayward.
Susan Hayward, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then Patty had her own problem with pills as well right around that time.
Yeah. And then she did a movie called Me, Natalie, which is mainly known as the screen debut of Al Pacino.
That's right.
But, a lot of TV. And she even was in a TV remake of Miracle Worker with her Patty playing Annie Sullivan, the teacher this time.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
She was, during the 70s, she was mother to actor Sean Astin, Samwise Gamgee of you know, Lord of the Rings series, with writer Michael Tell and Mackenzie Astin with actor John Astin. In 1982, she was diagnosed with manic depressive illness, but continued to work even with that.
She did like a sitcom where she was a judge or something.
Well, you mentioned Me, Natalie. That reminds me when we played trivia for Cinema St. Louis a couple of years ago, and Me, Natalie was the answer to a question. I think it was what was Al Pacino's first movie. And our scribe, who was your friend Anna,
yes,
I said Me, Natalie. So she wrote down Mr. Natalie, and they didn't give it to us because she had misunderstood me, I guess. I'll never forgive her for that.
Good.
We ended up winning anyway.
Yeah, he'll never forget, that's for sure.
That's right. So, R.I.P., Patty Duke. Hey, speaking of that trivia thing, that's coming up, I think, at the end of May. You guys all going to be on the team this year?
I'm going to try.
I think it's May 27th or something like that.
I had to skip last year. Did you guys win last year?
Of course we won. We had it was a movie trivia bloodbath. We got 98 out of 100. Although our friend Renee Hirschfeld, she was on a team that got 96, so she was right on her. She was nipping at our heels.
Yeah, that's right.
And she, I tried to get her to actually be on our team, but she refused. We probably would have got 100 out of 100. But we had Pete Timmerman and Jim Tudor on our team last year. They were kind of new to our team.
And they did very well for themselves. Yes.
They did great. Indeed. All right. So we'll talk about that some more when we win again this year. Another one of our favorite people is Roger Corman. And Roger Corman turns 90 tomorrow. Happy birthday to Roger Corman.
Cause for great celebration.
Yeah. Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I mean, the guy's still working. I just put an article up a couple weeks ago about him producing follow-up to Death Race 2000.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's still producing all these giant monster movies for the sci-fi channels.
Right yeah, there. He seems to have a lot of fun with those.
Proctopus and all that. Just great stuff.
Roger Corman directed 56 films. And produced about 450 films. Is still going strong.
So what? I recall. I don't know if he's got the record for the quickest turnaround on starting shooting a film. It may be the original Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, I think it was shot in 2 days.
According to Internet Movie Database, one of my favorite films, his last film was Roger Corman's Frankenstein Unbound.
Got a special place for that.
That
was kind of a comeback directing thing for him. He had stopped directing for at least a decade before that. I think Rick Toven and Brown with John Philip Law and Don Stroud was his last film as a director. And then he kind of came back. What year was that? It made around 90 maybe? Kind of came back
producing.
And directed. That's a pretty good movie. John Hurt and Raul Julia.
And Bridget
stuff.
Fonda.
Yeah.
Movie. Yeah. It's a 20th Century Fox film, wasn't it? So it was a studio film. Yeah. Well, he did St. Valentine's Massacre for Fox in the 60s.
Yeah, that's
didn't
right.
He?
Yeah.
So he went over to the majors every once in a while.
And he was a great director. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, he doesn't, I don't know if he gets credit for being as good a director as he should. He was working on incredibly small budgets and incredibly tight deadlines. I mean, if you look at the string of Roger Corman, Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe adaptions, those are just pure art. And
if he just did those, he would be, you know, a screen immortal just for that.
I'm going to torture you, Isabella. I'm going to make you suffer for your faithlessness to me. You harlot!
But he only had about 3 weeks on each of those, and they're still great. But if you look at the ones that he shot in England where he had like 5 weeks, Mask of the Red Death and especially Tomb of Ligeia, I mean, those are just masterpieces.
Oh, yeah.
And he's also known for mentoring directors Jonathan Demme, Francis Ford Coppola, Ron Howard, John Sayles,
James Cameron, Scorsese,
Gail Ann Hurd, Battle Beyond the Stars. They're movies, but he produced it.
He discovered everybody.
Yeah.
And gave them all their first big shot, their first big breaks. I mean, that's another, if he'd just done the Poe films, that would be enough. But instead, he's showcasing these young talents.
Which came first, then, American International Pictures or American Releasing? Because, those are always at the front of his movies.
I think American Releasing probably came first.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
That was the stuff like Attack of the Crab Monster and Monster from the Ocean Floor. I've got a big stack of movie memorabilia signed by Roger Corman. I was lucky enough, I directed an event here in St. Louis in 2011 called Vincentennial, the Vincent Price 100 Birthday Celebration. And Roger Corman came in as our guest of honor. So I was lucky enough to go meet him at the hotel where he was staying. And I immediately just handed him a big stack of movie posters. And he gladly signed them for me.
Oh, that's really neat.
So I've got It Conquered the World half sheet signed. I've even got my It Conquered the World Super 8 film box signed by Corman. I've got Pit and the Pendulum lobby card. I've The Trip with Peter Fonda. lobby card, Wild Angels lobby card, all the stuff signed by him.
Now, didn't he do two nights with the Vincent Tenney?
Oh, he sure did.
Being interviewed by Tim Lucas
at the High Point. The first night we showed Tomb of Lygia, which I think is one of his very, very best. And then the second night we showed Mask of the Red Death. Were you there for those?
I believe I was there both nights. Okay, that was a great event.
You know what I also like is when he shows up in movies as an actor. I mean, Ron Howard puts him in this just very simple senator role in Apollo 13.
His great cameo in Godfather 2.
He was one of the senators grilling Al Pacino in that film.
And there's a terrific one also in The Howling. Yeah. He's waiting to use the phone booth. And of course, as soon as he gets in there, he starts digging into the coin release thing to get some money.
Jonathan Demme would often put him in his films.
Philadelphia.
And what was the one that Anne Hathaway was nominated for? The Wedding something?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Rachel and the Wedding.
Yeah, Rachel gets married or something like that. Here he is at the wedding reception in that film. So, yeah, he pops up. I was honored to have dinner with Roger Corman. Roger Corman and Tim Lucas and I had dinner at a restaurant over in Central West End. In fact, I had to miss the screening of Mask of the Red Death because they did the interview and before the film started, and then we all went out to dinner. So that was quite a treat for me. Tomorrow at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, we're going to be running an article called Happy 90th Birthday, Roger Corman. Here are his top 10 best films. Now, actually, this was sort of a reformatted article that Jim and Dana Young and I wrote in 2010 to tie into a show I did at the Way Out Club called Super 8 Roger Corman Movie Madness. And if I look at this list now, I don't have Tomb of Lygia on this list. I think that would be number two or three. Maybe I just didn't appreciate it as much then because I hadn't seen it on the big screen. But let's run through this list really quick. We have time. Number 10 was Attack of the Crab Monsters with Russell Johnson and who else is in that? That's a classic.
Mel Wells?
Right. Yeah. And that's a really cheap, cheesy movie. I actually showed a 16mm print of that at the Way Out Club one night. It's pretty funny. The crabs eat human brains and they start talking.
Yeah, are they outfitted on cars or something or some sort of Autobot or something?
It's pretty cheesy, but it's a lot of fun. And then number 9 was Premature Burial, which was the part of the Poe series that Vincent Price did not star in, and it starred Ray Milland instead. It's really a good film, although it didn't do as well as the Vincent Price stuff.
Yeah. You need to have Price and Poe.
Yeah.
Really get the crowds in there.
And Corman. And number 8 was Bloody Mama, which is a fantastic gangster movie with Shelley Winters as Ma Barker and... Oh, who are her sons? De Niro.
De Niro. Don Stroud.
And Bruce Dern and Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a great gangster movie, and Shelley Winters just chews the scenery and really well directed by Corman. Number 7 was Little Shop of Horrors.
The original, 59, which you can buy just about anywhere. I guess it's still in the public domain.
Yeah, it's in the public domain. It stars Jonathan Hayes and Jackie Joseph. Is Audrey.
Actually, it's like the second or third screen appearance of Jack Nicholson, though, right?
Yeah, well, big screen appearance. Yeah, Cry Baby Killer was his movie debut in 58. Corman didn't do that. I think he'd done a little TV before that. Yeah, but he plays the dentist. I think, didn't Steve Martin play that character in the musical?
Well, actually, Nicholson plays the guy that really likes going to the dentist.
Yeah.
no, Novocaine, it dulls the senses.
It's a classic. Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors. Number 6 was Bucket of Blood. That's a beatnik counterculture classic with Dick Miller.
Walter Paisley?
Yeah, Walter Paisley. He's a failed sculptor, and he hangs out at these beatnik bars, and then he decides the best way to make good sculptures is to kill people and cover them with plaster.
And he kills Bert Convy. Game show icon.
Yeah.
Who's an undercover narc.
It's a classic. Number 5 was Wild Angels with Peter Fonda and Nancy Sinatra. That was a great biker movie. And Bruce Dern was in that as well, honing his crazy guy characters. I love that movie, Wild Angels. Number 4 was Machine Gun Kelly, starring Charles Bronson as Machine Gun Kelly, who was a real-life 30s gangster. The term G-Man was coined by Machine Gun Kelly. He surrendered and
don't
died
shoot,
in prison.
G-Man.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, that line was in Dillinger, which we saw the other night. Machine Gun Kelly with Charles Bronson, a classic. And he talked. Roger Corman talked about that movie at length, and working with Bronson during one of his talks at the High Point. Number 3 was X, the Man with the X-Ray Eyes. Ray Milland again. Why don't I have any Vincent Price movies on this list? This doesn't make any sense. I should have reassessed this list before, but it's too late now. X, the Man with the X-Ray Eyes is actually a pretty cool movie, though. It's really trippy.
Rickles.
A lot of religious overtones to that film. It's about a guy whose vision changes where he can start seeing through things and goes from there. There's not much you can do about it. And number two was The Trip with Peter Fonda. And that was actually written by Jack Nicholson. He's not in it, but he wrote the screenplay.
Has Bruce Dern in
Bruce Dern's back in that one. And Susan Strasberg has the lead in that one. Oh, and there's an interesting story behind that movie. Nicholson and Fonda and Roger Corman and Bruce Dern, they were getting ready to make the film. And Corman talked about this during his talk. And they all decided that they needed to go drop acid and experience it. And Fonda and Nicholson had already, done a lot of drugs, so they were prepared. Corman had never done any drugs, but he said, oh, what the heck, I'll drop some acid so I can kind of know what I'm doing. Bruce Dern, who played the crazy guy and the druggy guy in all those movies, refused to do the acid. Bruce Dern never drank. He jogged long before jogging. He was a health food fanatic and a vegetarian and stayed away from alcohol and drugs, yet he always played the crazy guys in the movies. So they had this trip, and they went down to Venice Beach, and they hallucinated, and Corman spoke very positively about his experience dropping acid. And Tim Lucas, who interviewed Corman at the High Point, has written a screenplay called The Man with Kaleidoscope Eyes about the making of The Trip and about these guys dropping acid and making this film. And he's supposedly Joe Dante was going to film it at one time. It's one of the great... No doubt, one of the great unproduced screenplays, and hopefully they'll get that in the can at some point.
Yeah, Corman gave Dante his big break, actually.
In
New World Pictures.
Yeah, in fact, the 35mm print of Mask of the Red Death that we showed at Vincentennial was from Joe Dante's personal collection. We were having trouble finding a decent print of that, and Dante offered to loan it to us. And number one I have, William Shatner, who we met over the weekend, or saw over the weekend, in The Intruder. Have you ever seen The Intruder, Jim?
I've not seen the whole thing, just bits of it. It sounds fascinating.
It's an amazing movie, and Corman says it's the only movie he ever made that lost money. It's about race relations, and it was filmed in Missouri. It was filmed down in the Boot Heel in Sykeston, Missouri. And it's about this racist who basically comes into this small town and tries to turn the whites against the blacks, and a little girl ends up missing, and William Shatner's character, I think she'd fallen in a hole or a well or something, but he tries to get everybody to think that the black people have kidnapped this little girl and there's race riots, and it's really, really good. In fact, I one time I was listening to Howard Stern, and he had Shatner on there, and he played an audio clip where Shatner's using the N-word over and over again. He goes, how about this movie, William? And Shatner's like, hey. He goes, I have nothing to apologize for starring in that movie. That's a great movie, and I was just a character I was playing. So that was number one. I think if I had to redo this list, I would certainly put Tomb of Ligeia and probably Pit in the Pendulum. I'm wondering if when we did this, I purposely left out the Vincent Price movies. I think I did. Because we had done a top 10 Vincent Price. That's exactly what happened. We had done a top 10 Vincent Price list a week or two later. Shucks. All right, I'm going to have to take a look at this article tonight. Anyways, before I post it tomorrow, I might have to change a couple of things around. Yeah. Anyways, happy 90th birthday to Roger Corman, and RIP to Miss Petty Duke, and RIP to the show, because we got to wrap it up. Next week we'll be back. Hopefully we'll be reviewing Hardcore Henry. I'm planning on seeing it. And Midnight Special, maybe we can review that.
We're hoping it opens next weekend.
And we'll all talk about a lot of other movie stuff, because that's what we do on the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And listen again next week.
Black leather, crash, 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 black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward into battle, there, chaps.
Right, that's right. Hey, hey, hey.
Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, smash, smash, smash.